Okay, so we are continuing our study of Sefer Shoftim, and we're in the last perek of the story of Shimshon, which is Perek Tazayin. And up until this point, it has been, you know, overall you would say purely positive in the wondrous story of the announcing of his birth with a Malach Hashem in Perek Yud Gimel. In Perek Yud Dalet, we had his first interaction with getting some level of revenge against the Plishtim. And then in last week's parak, in Parak Tesvav, that was really, you would almost say, the height of the revenge in terms of him really striking a blow from a position of power, from a position of, you know, a trajectory going forward where he could only imagine that if this is what he could do now, what he's going to be able to do as he continues. And that even in a moment where we kind of saw the members of the tribe of Yehuda give him over to the Plishtim, again, it's his force, his strength, is able to kind of save him and at the same time strike a blow against the Plishtim. And we even saw the last pasuk that we did together, which was the last pasuk in Parak Tesvav, had this almost like a capstone type of pasuk telling us that he judged the people for 20 years. And the truth is that a very similar pasuk, if not not word for word, but the last words of Perek Tazayin are going to be very similar. And in Perek Tazayin, that's going to be the end of the time of Shimshon, which would be the time that we would have expected there to be this, you know, and so led the people for this amount of time, which we've had. Among the many mefarshim that comment on this, there's a school of thought, the Radak among others, that the reason why we're hearing this now is because this is the end of the good time. And that as we already will begin just momentarily, Perek Tazayin, Pasuk Aleph, we see that Shimshon went on some type of downturn spiritually, and almost as an individual, the same way the nation, when they have a downturn spiritually, that comes, you know, with a downturn physically. So too, it is on the individual, right? If it's true on the national level, it's true on the individual level. And it can even be true with someone as great as Shimshon, with the parentheses that the greatness of Shimshon that we have seen has all been, you know, kind of what we would call maybe spoon-fed greatness. That, yeah, he was destined for greatness in utero. But what did he do himself to earn that greatness? And what level of spiritual strength was he on? That's a question that we could think about, and that even Shimshon could definitely make errors in judgment, which we're about to see. Specifically, we have already seen he has a tendency to be focused on his eyes, on what his eye sees, what his eye kind of desires. And so it could be that while he did, right, in Perek Tazayin, he's officially still on the scene, it's almost as if we want to end Perek Tazvav with that notion of he led them for 20 years. There is a minority view that perhaps it was even, the reason why we're going to hear it again at the end of Perek Tazayin is almost an idea of even after his active role of leading the people, there was an impact. The fact that the Plishtim would remember the name Shimshon, right? So the name Shimshon is a name that if you would whisper it to a Plishti at night, he would get a nightmare. And that can last for a certain amount of time, and maybe that lasted for another 20 years, even after Shimshon's time. So we're picking up Perek Tazayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vayelech Shimshon, Azasa. Shimshon goes to Aza. Now Aza, we haven't heard the name here, but Aza is one of the main Israeli cities. It's most likely Gaza City today is close enough to the ancient city of Aza, and they were, at least that's described more in Sefer Shmuel, but there were five Plishti cities. We're going to see a reference here in a few psukim to either the governors or the officers, however we want to translate the term, Sarnei Plishtim, the governors of the Plishtim. So here, I don't 100% know why in Sefer Shoftim we don't have a number, as opposed to in Sefer Shmuel, again, with the same Plishti people, and you know it's only perhaps one generation later that there were Chameshas. There were five governors of the Plishtim, because there were five major Plishti cities, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Aza, Ekron, and Gas. So Aza is a very important city among the Plishtim. And Shimshon goes there. Now, we have already seen that when Shimshon kind of goes towards the Plishtim, it's with an eye of doing, taking some form of revenge, again, on that personal level, never involving an army. He acts as himself. But here, he goes towards Aza, but then it's almost like there's a little bit of a turn. Vayarsham isha zona vayavo ilah. He sees there a woman who's a zona, a woman who is a harlot, vayavo ilah, and he comes there, he's intimate with her. Which seems, even for Shimshon, it seems uncharacteristic. That up until this point, we saw Shimshon engage in some type of marriage where he went through the proper channels in order to marry a Plishti woman. And we have the Radak and others saying that however we are understanding it, it needs to be within some type of prism that those women converted and they were proper and okay, and then it unraveled. But and that Shimshon had this idea, L'shem Shemayim. Here it doesn't seem to be L'shem Shemayim at all. And it seems to be him. You know, going off the path of what is proper. Again, with the mindset of Chazal, that he seems to be focused on his eyes. Vayar sham isha zona. He sees a woman who is a zona. And whether or not he went to Aza with that in mind, did he go to Aza with something else? It would appear, just based on how the pasuk is structured, that it's almost like there are two pieces to the pasuk, right? The asnachta that we always like to point out, the semi-pause is under the term Aza. So Vayelech Shimshon Azasa, he went to Aza. We don't know why he went to Aza. The only thing that in actuality we see happens there is Vayar Sham Yisazona Vayavoyla. And this is the beginning of Shimshon's downturn, and it's not considered to be proper. And therefore those same Mefarshim, like the Radak, who thinks he converted the women to marry, that was not the approach here. So this is a Aza woman, a Plishti woman, that he consorts with. Pasuk Beis. La Aza Sayim Lemor. To those who were in Aza, to the citizens of Aza, Lemor, it was said. And the obvious question is, who said this? Ba Shimshon Heina, Shimshon has come here. So what happens? Vayosobu Vayervu Lo Kol Alayla B'Shar Ha'ir. So they went around and they they lay in ambush. They set a trap, kol halayla, all the night, b'shar ha'ir, at the city's gate. Vayis charshu kol halayla lemor. They were charash, is from the language of being silent. They were secretive, they were silent all night. Lemor, this is what they were saying, most likely whispering among each other. Ad or haboker vahargunhu. And right by the Or HaBoker, by the dawn of light, that's when we're going to kill him. Now, why they don't kill him in the middle of the night? Why are they waiting? It seems that they're clearly planning it out, and they think that that'll be the most opportune time. Maybe that's the time he'll be least expecting it. There is good intel that Shimshon is not, he's not a regular Jew, he's not a regular person, right? His track record precedes him. And just previously, the end of Perek Tezvav, with just a jawbone, he knocked out hundreds of plishtim. So, who announces this? Right, lazasayim lemor. So it's either one of two things. Either it's that somehow he was spotted, the zona. Someone else is spreading the word that Shimshon is there, or it's actually Shimshon. That Shimshon actually puts the word out there that he's there. Because, right, this, and it would fit in. Granted, he's kind of veered off the path by being with the Isha Zona, but Shimshon is still someone there, always trying to poke at the Plishtim, always trying to get something, right? So it would be great if he started his own rumor that he's present in the city, and maybe that would cause some trouble. Pasuk Gimel. Vayishkab Shimshon ar chatzi halayla. Shimshon lay there until midnight. Chatzi halayla, half the night. Vayakam b'chatzi halayla, he gets up at the half point of the night. Vayechoz b'dal sosh sha'ar ha'ir uvishtei ha'mezuzos. He grabs hold of the doors of the gate of the city and to the two posts. Vayisa'im im habriach. Vayisa'im, he removed them. He uprooted them. The Metzudas Sion says it's a language of akara, to uproot. la'akor. So he uproots them im habriach. Im habriach is with the pole or the crossbar, right? The briach, we have the brichim, where we have them in the construction of the Mishkan. Those were the bars that kind of held the beams together. Remember, there was the briach atichon that went in the middle. But a briach is like a pole or a crossbar. Vayasam al kseifav, he places it on his shoulders. Vayalem el rosh ahar, and he brings them up on top of a mountain, asher al pnei Chevron, which faces out towards Chevron. And it would seem that he escaped the trap. There are numerous questions that we could ask without necessarily a clear answer. In that, if this was the beginning of the downturn of Shimshon, why is he able to escape? Why is he? And also, it seems that he escapes in a quite the elaborate way. And it we have to imagine that the crowd that he leaves behind is going to remain intimidated of him. Now, you may be the possible approach to the answer is that if this is indeed the beginning of the downturn of Shimshon, so eventually it's going to be the Plishtim that carry out the opposite, right? The revenge against Shimshon. That the Plishtim are going to capture Shimshon. The Plishtim are going to punish Shimshon. What is going to keep their blood boiling? It could rather be this provocation of him coming into one of the main cities, him destroying the gateway, not to mention the fact that he seems to have eluded this party that was waiting to ambush him. And so those individuals are probably riled up. So it would appear that on the one hand, the perspective, it seems that Shimshon kind of won this battle, but we all know there's the concept of winning the battle and losing the war, and that Shimshon in the long run is going to be, right, he's provoking the Plishtim to the point where they may actually be successful, and because of his spiritual downturn, they may actually be successful at getting at him.
Is his mission just to instigate?
That's what it would appear. Meaning the words way back when in Perek Yud Gimel that the Malach had told the woman was, this was back in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Hey, v'hu yachel lo shi'as Yisrael mi'ad plishtim. He will begin to save Yisrael from the hands of the Plishtim. And that language of beginning, if you recall, we kind of discussed it two ways. One way was that really that the peace treaty that Avraham Avinu had made with the Plishtim had been in force until that time. So it was going to be the beginning of any Jew kind of being able to, quote unquote, move off that peace treaty and therefore fight against the Plishtim, even if the Plishtim had broken the treaty, right? But there's also this idea that it was going to be a techila, it was going to be the beginning, and that he's always acting on his own. And this also, this seems to be this, it's like a mixed episode of him going to Aza. It does work to some extent that he ends up provoking them, but there's that side turn that he veered off. He saw this Isha and he did what was, you know, inappropriate. The previous time that he engaged with a woman in order to marry her, so we saw that was part of this elaborate plan to work with the Plishtim. It doesn't seem that his being with the Isha Zona is anything significant to the story. It doesn't seem that we don't have like the Plishtim saying we're so upset that he was with one of our women. That doesn't seem what it's about. It seems to be that it's two things happening at the same time. Pasuk Dalid seems to fast forward and jump in very quickly to a description of the next scene. Vayhi acharichein, it was after this. Again, we don't know the amount of time. Vayahav isha benachal sorek. He loved a woman in the Nachal Sorek, by the Sorek Brook, Ushma Delilah. Her name was Delilah, the famous Delilah, from translations of Shoftim, and maybe other, you know, that's the origin of the name. The reason why I say it goes so quickly is because, first of all, we're missing the fact that he went after his eyes, which most likely it happened, because that's the pattern. But all of a sudden, we're up to Vayahav. And the Torah uses the term Ahava in different ways, in terms of relationship between men and women, right? And there is at least one prime example we know that when it's the pasuk says that Yitzchak loved Rivka, it seemed to be that it developed over time. That first he brought her into the tent, and then he loved her. This, the way that it's being presented to us seems to be more instantaneous. It seems to be like it happened. He loves a woman, her name is Delilah. Now, obviously, we've pointed this out before, that it could very well be that we don't know everything, and not every pasuk is being, you know, not every detail in the story is being presented. And where the Tanakh wants to pick up is that he's already in love with this woman. Chazal pick up on her name, that the shorish of that name is Dalal or Dal. Dal means to impoverish, to be impoverished, to be poor, to be lowered, right? We refer... Right, it's not to scare anybody, but you know, in a few months it's already high holiday season. Right, we sent out the high holiday survey. So when we start saying slichos, we refer to Hashem. We say we are before you dalim v'reikim. We are dalim. We are poor v'reikim. We're empty. We're not poor necessarily financially. We're poor spiritually, meritoriously. That, and it, at least that's how we looked as ourselves. So there was a dal. She's the one who lowers down Shimshon. Now, she's not to blame. In the end, she has to have her day of reckoning with Hashem for the role that she plays in the story. It happens to be the Tanakh does not relate to her and doesn't say she was deserving of this and that. That's between her and Hashem. But, and therefore, Shimshon is responsible for his having gone down spiritually. But she's the cause, she is the opportunity for him to have that dal, not just moment, but almost the mindset. And it would appear that we're no, that at this point it's not part of a plan that he loves her in order to do something with the plishtim. He loves, and therefore it's probably not on that path of the radak that he converts them, and it's proper along those lines. Pasuk hey. Vayalu elah sarnei plishtim. So here are the governors, the sarnim, the officers of the plishtim. The governors, they come up to her. Vayomer la, they say to her, pati oso, language of mefates, seduce. Seduce him. Uri'i bamekocho hagadol. And see, what is his great strength? What is the source of his great strength? Uvamen uchal lo, with what will we be able against him? Va'asarnu la'anoso, that we could bind him, that we could capture him, to afflict him with pain. Va'anachnu nitan lach ish, elef umea kasef. We will each give to you, each one ish, each of us, each of our us, the governors, we will give you 1,100 portions of silver, pieces of silver. It sounds like a lot, and also we don't know how many governors there are. Obviously there are at least two, because it's plural. So you're talking about at least 2,200 pieces of silver. But if we go with the normal approach of there being five, and there could have maybe at this point been more, you're maybe talking about 5,500 pieces of silver. Obviously, we don't know what pieces of silver are worth, but it seems like they're offering her a lot. It's amazing that they know about the relationship, right? They know that she has a close relationship with Shimshon, and they know that the ticket is... The ticket to finding out information about Shimshon is specifically through his heart, through the relationship that he has with a woman. There is a track record for that. In the story with the, right, we're going back to the story with the riddle, that in the end, the way that the plishtim found out the answer was through a woman, was through the wife. And so there's a track record. And what I find fascinating about the pasuk is no one asks, L'havdil elef alfei havdalos, right? But when I was growing up, the image of like the strongest person in the world was Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger. No one ever asked, what is the secret of his strength? You look at him, you see that he's built like an ox. He's got muscles that are bigger than my whole self. Okay, the source of his strength is that he's strong. There's something about Shimshon's strength that seems to be, it's beyond human alone. It seems to be something, right? So we obviously know that it's Ruach Hashem. It's that the spirit of Hashem, specifically the Shofet of Shimshon, manifests itself in a physical way. But what I find fascinating is that that's apparent to others. The fact that he was able to do the things that he has done it would makes it appear that there's some type of source of his strength, his secret, right? What's his secret sauce? What is it? And they want to know, and they think that she's the way to find it out. And here they're not threatening her. They're just offering her money. The difference is that in the first marriage, which we considered to be somewhat proper. Again, his parents were a little surprised that that's the route he was taking. But it seems to be somewhat divinely planned, or at least blessed. She and her father's house were threatened physically. They basically threatened to kill her and her father if she didn't help them. Here, there's a bribe, and we're about to see in Pasuk Vav that she's very interested in cashing in, which speaks to her character. And so, not that we needed to necessarily frame her as being a bad person, because she's going to do that a lot on her own. But it's interesting just to compare and contrast this different situations, and also the one direction of the love, right? We only have the pasuk presenting us. Vayeahav isha, he loves a woman, but there's no indication of how she feels back to him, and her actions are going to show us exactly how she feels if she's willing to choose money over her relationship with Shimshon. And it's not just her relationship with Shimshon, as we're going to see. It's basically going to be, you know, basically signing his death certificate. So I'm giving him, basically giving over to the authorities. So what kind of love could she have felt for Shimshon if she's willing to sell it for these portions of silver? So she's in. Pasuk Vav, Vatomer Delila El Shimshon. So Delila says to Shimshon, Hagida Nali, tell me, Bameh Kochacha Gadol, what is the source of your great strength? Uvameh Seaser La'anusecha. And how could you be bound up to afflict you, to cause you pain? Which is an extremely strange request. Maybe the first part is not so strange, right? You are in a relationship with someone who has a superhuman ability. And so maybe you say, what is the source of your superhuman power? The fact that she ends off, and how could you possibly be bound up to then cause to afflict you? I think we would read that as some type of a red flag. Shimshon doesn't, though. Shimshon doesn't. He doesn't read it as a red flag. And we can all understand why perhaps he doesn't read it as a red flag. He's blinded. He's blinded by this love. And therefore, in other situations in life as well, sometimes when people are blinded by their emotions, the rational thinking goes out the window, and he doesn't have the ability to decipher her statement and see, oh, wait, this is a little bit fishy. You're asking, how could I be captured and how could I be caused pain? No, it must be. You're just curious. How strong am I? What's the source of my strength that I'm so strong that even if I had this, I would, you know, I'd be able to break out or that much, right? You're locking me in chain upon chain upon chain, that would do it. But he's not suspicious at all. However, he's still reserved in terms of holding back what we would call the truth. Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Elah Shimshon. Shimshon says to her, Im Yasruni B'Shiva Yisarim Lachim Asher Lo Charag. If you would bind me up in 7 ropes that are lach, that are moist, Asher Lo Charavu, that have not been dried out. And we spoke about this a little bit last time, that in those times, the ropes that they were using, the more moist they were, the stronger they were. That over time they would dry out, and therefore they lose their strength. You'd be able to crack it, you'd be able to get through it. So if you did that, v'chalisi v'aisi kacharam, I would become weak if I was bound up by such chains, and I would become like everybody else. Pasachas, Vayalu la sarnei plishtim, Shiva yisarem lachim, asher lo charavu. So it comes on order. The governors of the plishtim go ahead and deliver her 7 moist ropes that have not dried out. Vatasrehu bahem. She binds him up in these ropes. Now, at that moment, what is he thinking? It's unclear. what she was thinking was, this is it. She believes him wholeheartedly. Pasuk Tes. V'ha'orev Yoshev la b'cheder. There was that language of Orev, which we had in Pasuk Beis, excuse me, that there was a ambush party. Yoshev la, sitting b'cheder in the room, somewhere behind the curtains, behind the scenes. V'atomer elav, she says to him, Plishtim alech Hashem Shon. The Plishtim are here. Almost as an alarm. Not that the Plishtim who are hiding should jump out, just that Shimshon should think that he's under attack. And what happens immediately? Vayinateka yisasa yisarim. He snaps, he breaks through the ropes. Kasher yinase ptil hanaores baharicho esh. Just like flax, flax straw snaps when it even just smells fire, when it kind of comes as close to fire as possible. I think the lights went out. Should we turn them on? There's two switches in the back. Pause for station identification. I think both lights are together. So someone turned it off there, thinking they're doing well. On. Yeah, just press on. Yeah, great. Thank you. So he breaks through like exactly how, right, how flax would break through even when it smells fire. Velono da kocho. Velono da kocho, almost like he didn't even use his full strength. He broke through the chains. There's nothing. And almost similar to when he was actually captured by the Plishtim, when he wanted to, he could just rip through chains. What seems to be is that he's never aware of the fact that there's an ambush party there. Right? We are. Right? We're told that they were there, but he doesn't seem to be aware of such a thing. However, it becomes very clear that he didn't tell Delila the full truth. Pasuk Yud. Vatomer Delila el Shimshon. So Delila says to Shimshon, Hine hisaltabi. Behold, you have mocked me. The way in the Tzidut Tzion defines it, la'ag, which is to like make fun of, uschok, and like a joke. So hisaltabi, you made a joke of me. Vatadaberi like savim, and you said to me falsehoods. Ata now, she says to him, hagida nali, tell me, vameta asar, how could you be bound up? Now if it's true that he didn't know that the Plishtim were there, or had been there, so again, she's just being, why is she being so persistent? But the fact that she tied him up and he had to break out, again, foolishly he could think if this is some type of game, this is some type of, you know, she's trying to see if she could be stronger than him and he'll show her something like this. And again, it seems to be extremely strange to us, but Shimshon is very much blinded by his feelings. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Eleha, he says to her, Im asor ya'asruni ba'avosim chadashim, if you bind me up, if you certainly bind me up in avosim, in ropes that are chadashim, that are new, asher lo nase b'hem melacha, that work had never been done with them, then v'chalisi v'ayisi kacharam, I will be weak like any other person. That we all know, right, after you, right, the car is never as good as when you drive it off the lot. The second, right, then it starts depreciating. I don't know much about ropes, but he's at least able to sell her on the idea that a new rope, a rope that has never had any work done, that's going to be the strongest. Right? Once you start working, once it was used for the animals, once it was used for something else, then you're going to it'll be weakened. So you want to get me? You want to know how to bind me up? I should have new ropes. Okay? Pasuk Yud Beis. Vatikach Delila Avosim Chadashim. She takes it herself. Now, it could be she got it from the governors of the Plishtim. It could be she's kind of upping her game. Right? She's now a little more vested into this now. Because now it's not just about the money. It's about the fact that Shimshon deceived her. And so she's got skin in the game in the sense that she may be standing up for herself. Vatikach Delila, she takes herself. Avosim Chadashim. Vata Asreu Bahem, she binds him with them. Batomer Elav, and she says to him again, Plishtim alach Hashem Shon. The Plishtim are here. Vohoriv Yoshev Echeder. And the same, or at least similarly, there is a raiding party. There is a party waiting in ambush in the room. Vayinatkei me'al zro'osav kachut. He snapped them off of his arms, kachut, like a thread. The same way you could break through a thread and definitely, you know, a single thread. The same way, right? Because it's she ties him up in plural, right? Avosim chadashim, and yet he can break it like a chut. Like a chut is a single thread. So, right? Most, all rope and things of that nature are made by combining many threads together in order to keep it strong. He broke through as if it was a single thread. So she says back to Shimshon, Adhena hisaltabi, until how long are you going to mock me? Vatadaberi like Savim, and to speak to me words of falsehood. Hagidali, tell me, Bamete Asar, with what could you be bound up? Vayomer Elah, and he says to her, Im ta'argni es sheva machlefos roshi, im hamasachas. He says to her, right, a language of Oreg. Oreg is to weave. So im targi, if you would weave as sheva machlefos roshi, if you would weave together seven locks of my hair, sheva machlefos roshi, im hamasachas, with some type of wooden rod that was used in the weaving process. If you would basically bind up my hair in that way, that would weaken me. Now, on the one hand, he's moved a little closer, in the sense that he speaks of his hair, and as we'll see, the hair is symbolic of his strength. Now, it obviously can't be that any nazir that takes a vow of nazirus, because they have long hair, they're going to have superhuman strength. Because if that was the case, first of all, many more people would probably become a nazir, right? I think there are rules and regulations in many armies, but definitely the Israeli army, in terms of how much hair a person can have, what type of hair do, and facial hair, and religious exemptions and things of that nature. But if, you know, if there was superhuman strength to every nazir, we would probably say the top commando unit in the army should all become nazirim, because it'll come with it'll come with super strength. So it's, clearly that's not the case. His strength comes from Hashem. It could be the devotion to being a nazir is the source for that continued strength and continued reliance on Hashem in such a way. So he moves on because he says, but he's still pushing her off. And, you know, we don't have a full picture of what he's trying to gain, right? Most likely, this is now the third time that he has told her the wrong answer to the question, and the previous two times he was proven wrong. What makes him think he's not going to be proven wrong again? Pasuk Yud Dalid, Vatiska b'yaseid. So she inserted like a peg. The yaseid is a peg into his hair. Vatomer elav. She said to him, Plishtim alach Shimshon. The plishtim are upon you, Shimshon. Vayikatz mishnaso. He woke up from his sleep. Vayisa'es hayaseid ha'areges ha'masaches. He's able to kind of totally destroy this peg that was weaved and the wooden board. Nothing is keeping him weak. Pasuk tezvav. Vatomer elav. She says to him, Eich tomar ahavtich. How can you say, I love you? Vilibcha ein iti. Yet your heart is not with me. Zeh shalosh pa'amim hisaltabi. These three times you have mocked me. Velo igadatel. You did not tell me bameh kochacha gadol, where your great strength comes from. And he doesn't respond. It would appear that somehow, some way, they get past this slight little hurdle of miscommunication. Right? This is not what any romantic relationship with a significant other. You don't want to hear those words, you know. But you say, how can you love me, and how can you say my heart is with me, your heart is with me, if you do this, if you do that? And that's the, maybe that you would say that's the beginning of the straw breaking the camel's back, in the sense that that Shimshon's going to have a breakdown. The fact that he has these extremely strong feelings towards her, when he understands how much it's quote unquote paining her, that she doesn't know the answer to her question, so it begins to eat at him. Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayhi Ki Heitzika Lo. It was when she would torment him, Bidvareha, with her words, Kol Hayamim, each day, Vataltsehu. Vataltsehu, she, right, she pressured him, Vatiktsar Nafsholamus. Vatiktsar Nafsholamus is a pretty extreme statement. Vatiktsar Nafsho, his nefesh became short, lamus, to die. What may be symbolized there is that his spiritual downfall is in the mix, and that is unfolding. Right, there's this physical death and this spiritual death, and at this moment, with the downturn that Shimshon has taken, he's heading closer and closer towards that quote unquote spiritual death, and it just eats at him. It eats at him. It's distressing him, and it kind of eventually he breaks. He breaks. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayaged la es kol libo. He tells her everything that's in his heart. Vayomer la, and he says to her, Mora lo ala al roshi. A razor has not gone forth upon my head. Ki nizir elokim ani mi beten imi. For I am a nazir of God from the time I was in my mother's womb. Im gulachti v'sar mimenu kochi. If you would shave me and remove from me my strength, v'chalisi v'aisi v'chol adam, I would be like everyone. And this time she believes him. She believes him because a number of interpretations, one of them being, he finally spoke of God in his dialogue with her. And that Shimshon, and again, you know, we're painting Shimshon as a complex character in Tanakh. Even during his spiritual downturn, she understands that if he uses the Shem Hashem, if he uses the name of Hashem, it's for something serious. It's something truthful. It's like in a different league. Right? Yes, maybe Shimshon would mention things on the side to, again, from her perspective, be a joke at her, to poke fun of her, to mock her. But if he's going to say, Ki nizir elokim ani mi beten imi, first of all, he's invoking the memory of his mother, but first and foremost, he's saying he's a nizir elokim, that she knew he was telling the truth. He says that if you give me a haircut, that will remove my strength, which, According to most of the Mepharshim, it's some type of an idea that Shimshon gets his strength from Hashem. But we all know that the way that God works in this world, 99% of the time, is through Teva, is through nature. That Hashem doesn't like to go outside the bounds of nature too often. Yes, there's a Kriyas Yamsuf and there's a Makos B'Mitzrayim, but for the most part, Hashem is behind the scenes, and a miracle is brought out via natural ways. And so how could Shimshon access this superhuman strength? It would come through the fact that he's a Nazir, and specifically through his hair. Should he end being a Nazir? Should he end being a Nazir? Then his strength would leave. There's a little bit proof to the fact that we had pointed out that Shimshon was a unique Nazir. Shimshon perhaps is a Nazir only from two of the prohibitions, the prohibition of coming in contact with dead and the prohibition of cutting hair, but not with the prohibition of wine. Had he been a full-fledged Nazir, he could have also said to her, you know what, one l'chaim and I'm done. One cup of wine and I'd be done. He specifically goes to the hair. And that if you would shave the hair, if you'd cut the hair, the breaking of being a Nazir, that would sap his strength. And therefore he would, as he said before,
which in reality was a mocking way. Here it is, v'chalisi v'hayisi v'chol adam. V'chalisi, I'd be weakened, almost similar to the language of chole, to be sickened. V'hayisi v'chol adam, and I would be like everybody else. Pasuk Yud Ches, v'tera delila ki higidla, es kol libo. Delila saw that he told her everything that was in his heart. She was able to tell that he was more sincere, whether it's because he said Shem Hashem, or whether it's because, you know, they had some type of relationship. It's being presented as being a close relationship, at least from his. But it could very well be that she learned how to tell, right? The same way that spouses can usually call out their spouse for not being truthful, if that's the case. So she, you know, she has that radar. She's able to tell that this time it's a little bit different. He's more convincing. It sounds more real, and therefore it is. Vatishlach vatikra l'sharnei plishtim le'mor. So she calls out, she sends for and calls out to the Plishti governors, saying as follows. Alu hapam. Come up this time. Ki higid li es kol libo. He told me everything that's in his heart. Va'alu ela sarnei plishtim, so the sarnei plishtim came to her, va'ya'alu ha'kesef bi'adam, and they brought the money with them. Now the three times we hear that he's sharing kol libo, all of his heart. So first it says he told her what was in his heart. Then it says she saw that he did say that. And then it says, she sent to the Plishtim, by the way, I'm telling you, he told me everything that's in his heart. What is going on in the heart, and how does that have to do with the strength? I don't exactly have a full understanding of the phrase, but what's interesting is that she challenged him, invoking heart, right? She had challenged him by saying, how could you love me? V'libcha eniti, your heart is not with me. So when you know, this almost in a, I guess you could walk away with a little bit of a positive, she's basically claiming to have a superficial relationship with him. She's claiming, how could you say you love me and that your heart is with me? You lie to me, you mock me. So you're basically saying, she's telling him, she's challenging him, that your heart is not in it. So how do you rectify a casual relationship? It's by adding heart. It's by almost adding to the emotional level of the relationship. So therefore, he's not just going to answer her question, which is a strict question of what's the source of your strength. Okay, he says a razor hasn't gone forth from my head, implying that if a razor would go forth from my head, the strength would be gone. But almost to a certain extent, you could take a little bit of a positive from the story, is that he speaks back to her concern. Her concern was his heart is not for her, but he shares his heart. He shares his life story. He shares something intimate about himself that maybe that's why she believes him on the hair part. She believes him on the strength part, because he's actually opened up to her. He has made himself vulnerable. And in general, that's a very good thing. Again, appropriate for every relationship at its time. But, you know, lahavdil, in a regular, normal relationship between a young man and a young lady, or an older man, older, whatever, the idea is that when each one, in a safe way, makes themselves vulnerable to the other, that leads to a real connection. That leads to a real sense of intimacy that goes beyond the physical, but it's much more of a spiritual connection, of a soulmate connection. And he wants her. And so he's willing to do that. And along with that comes the quote-unquote secret of his strength. And the Plishtim come, they give her the money. It must mean that she told them over everything. She told them over everything, right? All it says is ki higid li es kol libo. She tells them, by the way, he told me everything that's in his heart, and they bring the money. So it must mean that she was able to effectively give over to them that the end is in the quote unquote the end is in sight, that we're going to have the ability to bring down Shimshon. And he's so, you know, throughout this part of the story, you obviously we know that Hashem is trying to punish Shimshon, but from a certain perspective, you kind of feel for Shimshon that he's getting so taken in by her, and he's so influenced by his desire for her, and for his, you know, by his, even though the pasuk didn't necessarily say it about his relationship with her being based on his eyes, but usually if we kind of take a step back, and if we were playing we were some type of relationship therapist looking, and Shimshon and Dalila came into our office, Lahavdil, but we would say this is a very unhealthy relationship. It's a very one-directional relationship. He opens up to her. He wants to do for her. She's just demanding of him. And most likely, it's a superficial relationship. Why would he be interested in a superficial relationship? Probably based on the eyes. It's based on the desire. It's based on what. Now, we were not told, it happens to be, just to play devil's advocate for a second, we weren't told about her appearance. She's not described, right? Tanakh is not shy. When there's a woman of a beautiful appearance, and sometimes it's Sarah Imenu on the way down to Mitzrayim, or it's Rachel Imenu, the Torah is not afraid to say that a person looks beautiful. You just, you know, that's the Tanakh will say it straight. We don't have that description of Dalila, but you'd have to almost by process of us analyzing the fact that he's so interested in her, and she is not giving him anything real. What must she be giving him? She must be giving him the physical aspects of a relationship, and that's why he's so bought in. Now we could also play the kind of the divine card that this is the path to bring down his downfall, to bring punishment that he's supposed to get, and so to a certain extent, Hashem can allow him or encourage him to fall for such a woman and to get fully. To get fully entrapped in the situation. Pasuk Yotes. Vatiyashenhu al berkeha. She lulled him to sleep on her knees. She brought him to sleep on her knees. Which definitely speaks to, again, from Shimshon's perspective, the closeness that they must feel, that he feels to her, that he could fall asleep in her lap, right? Normally that's something a person, right? Granted, every once in a while, you may be a person who takes the subway all the time, has a neighbor who like nods off on them, but it's weird and it's freaky and whatever. You probably wake them up, or you get up, or you call the police. I don't know what happens. Thank God I drive. But it's not something, right? It's not something you do on purpose with a stranger. That act and the description of a person falling asleep on someone else is something you do when you feel vulnerable, when you're able to feel comfortable. That Shimshon feels fully comfortable with her, that he falls asleep on her knees. Vatikra la'ish, she called over to a man. Vatiglach es sheva machlefos rosho, and the man cut off the seven locks of hair. Vatachel la'anoso, and it began to afflict him. We'll talk about that phrase in a second. Vayasar kocho me'alav, his strength was removed. His strength was removed from him. So it's interesting that she doesn't take matters into her own hand. Why that is, I'm not sure. Vatikra la'ish, she calls him vatiglach es sheva machlavos rosho. Why is she involving someone else? He's fallen asleep. This is her time to kind of act totally on her own. Why she gets assistance is unclear. Why did they cut off sheva machlafos rosho, seven locks of hair? So It could very well be that it's just he kind of left that as a type of hint, meaning in the third time that he pushed her off, right? The first time he says, "I need if you have fresh ropes." Oh, that didn't work. Whereas new ropes that were never used. The third time was if you weave together 7 locks of my hair. So he kind of dropped the hint that 7 is significant. We would have to have imagined, right? We're not dealing with, we're dealing with the hair being symbolic of the strength that Hashem endowed upon him. And so, you know, presumably the same way that like a regular Nazir would lose their Naziris via one cup, or would be in violation of their Naziris with one cup of wine. So, you know, so too with a haircut, right? A haircut is always that terrible joke that you don't really go for a haircut. Really, it's a hair's cut. No one goes to get one haircut. You get many hairs cut. We call it a haircut. But that if you would even cut a little bit of the hair, that would ruin the entity, right? There are notions like that, right? The halacha says that by a para aduma, so the para aduma is supposed to be completely red. If it has 2 black hairs, the whole thing, it's 99.9% red, but it's not. It can ruin the whole thing just with that little amount. So you'd have to imagine that for Shimshon's strength to be quote unquote sapped, or removed, even the smallest amount of hair, she cuts a large portion of hair, 7 locks of hair. Vatachalanoso is an interesting phrase because it implies, and this is the way that the Radak understands, right? The Mesudas David understands it in a what we would call like simple level of pshat of the pasuk, that it's foreshadowing that because his hair was cut, affliction is going to be able to come to him in the future because the plishim are going to be able to capture him, that they're going to be able to physically assault him, which we'll see. That the Plishtim have this desire that they don't just, and they even hinted at her when the governors came to her and said that we want to capture him. It wasn't Va'asar Nuhu Lahargo. It wasn't we want to capture him in chains in order to kill him, which is, you know, you would say the bare minimum of what you want to do to an enemy, capture to kill. No, they had said back in Pasuk Hey, Vasarnu lanasoso. They want to cause affliction. They want to cause some pain. They want to take a revenge against Shimshon that's going to take time. That's going to, right? He's going to be a prisoner of war, or you know, not war, but a prisoner to be afflicted. So the Mesudas David says it's foreshadowing. The Radak says something fascinating. He says that even though the haircut took place and Shimshon was asleep, the language of the Radak is hirgish ba'atzmo inui. Inside, he felt pain while he was sleeping. Almost like, you know, something happens to a person while they're sleeping and it's like a light level of pain where it doesn't wake them up, but they're clearly in pain. They have an intense, right? You would kind of, you know, maybe it's, you know, sometimes with a child, you can kind of see the small child, they're sleeping. You see that they're in some type of discomfort in their sleep. It's not so much that it's waking them up, but they're discomforting. So the Radak says there was actually some level of pain. And that he was already weak, because he was already weakened from the haircut, he's already had some type of physical pain that he's not even aware of, and as we'll see, even when he wakes up, he's not aware of that according to Radak, the physical pain that he had experienced. Pasachaf, Vatomer, one more time, she says, Plishtim alecha Shimshon. He's sleeping, but she says out loud, Plish, right, Shimshon, the Plishtim are upon you. Vayikatz mishnaso, he wakes up from his sleep. Vayomer, and he says, Eitze kipam bepam viina er v'hulo yadak ki Hashem sar mi'alav. He wakes up from his sleep and he says, Eitze, I'm going to go out kipam bepam, like I've always done, viina er. Viina er is technically another language of like waking up. Uru, 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 mishenaschem, right? Viina er, I will awaken within myself. meaning I'm ready to go to battle. V'hulo yada ki Hashem sarmei alav. He did not know that Hashem had removed himself from upon him. And here we almost have the Navi kind of acting as narrator, that the what we had saw before, Vayasar kocho me'alav, his strength is just this physical concept that he was super duper strong and it's based on his hair. Here we see it straight, Vahulo yada ki Hashem sarmei'alav. Hashem had removed his providence, Hashem had removed his ruach, his spirit, from being upon Shimshon, and that therefore his strength is totally sapped. There are about 11 psukim left. We're going to be taking a long hiatus, but I don't want to rush anything. So we're going to pause here, and we'll figure out a way to continue the story at the right time, and we'll get everybody refocused in order to finish off the story of Shimshon properly.